Shabbat Shalom of those who will watch with us online. The message I want to give today is called It's Harvest Time. It's Harvest Time. And we just finished the Shemitah. Many lessons we learned from the Shemitah that I'd like to go into today, though, because it's really interesting. I don't know about you who were keeping the Shemitah, but I know with myself, I was so focused on the Shemitah because of the importance of the Shemitah. During the whole Shemitah, I didn't think of anything else but that Shemitah. I didn't want to lose anything. I wanted to know what Yahweh was going to share with me, the lessons, and it was unbelievable. But when the Shemitah ended, it was kind of like, now what? Right? Now what? I want to start in Ecclesiastes 3. Ecclesiastes 3, and verse 1 says, "To all there is an appointed time, even a time for every purpose under the heavens, a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pull up what is planted," right? So here it is, during the Shemitah year, it wasn't the time to plant. It was the time not to plant or sow. It wasn't the time to prune, right? It was the Shemitah. It was the year of release, okay? Not the time to plant or harvest. And one of the big things I learned during the Shemitah year was what a facade the world is, right? It really is a facade out there. And I know in Western society, it's not like this with our third world brethren, that I know in Western society, there's this false concept, you know, if there's fruit on your tree in front of your house, most people don't eat it because they think, ooh, that could have a worm in it, you know? Yet, when you go to the supermarket, somehow you think that food mysteriously became edible, right? It's the same fruit that was on the tree outside your house that's in the supermarket. But we have this concept, we have this false concept that the world has given us, that somehow what the world is giving us is normal, and if you do something outside of that system of the world, then it's not normal, right? Homeschooling is not normal, yet it was done from creation. But if you train your children in the public school system, then that's everything that's good. And where does that come from? It actually comes, you know, from the concept of communism, of trying to indoctrinate children into the mindset, you know, of the political mindset, like Hitler, you know, making even the Hitler children. It's indoctrination that comes. So I realized, too, in my life during the Shemitah, how many things in my life were rituals? Even going to a supermarket became a ritual, but you didn't know it. You know, it's just every week you're going there. And during the year of release, we were released from so much of that. You know, and that's why I said, wow, it was a year that Yahweh says you can be released from it, right? Like you come to Sukkot, and what does he say? If you come here, you can ask for a special blessing. I hope everybody here has asked for that special blessing. And during Shemitah, he literally says, it's the year of release. Do you have something? Do you have a sickness? Do you have pride? Do you have anything? Release it to me and you can release it. And praise Yahweh, I know in my own life there were things released, and talking to brethren all around the world, that people were released. And I hope many of you were released from that facade. You know, because it got to the point that there was really no reason to go to a supermarket. There was hardly anything we could buy. And if you're only going to buy milk, right, and cheese, you could do that maybe every 2 weeks or 3 weeks. So that ritual that we got into of going to a supermarket, we were able to break that stronghold. And the Shemitah was a year that, and you want to know something that's interesting? I never realized even just going out and getting a cup of coffee is a ritual. You know, in America, it's a ritual that people will go to Starbucks or something and spend $5-7 on a cup of coffee, not because they love that coffee so much, it's just a ritual. It's a place for people to get together. In Italy, it's the same thing. You'll see all day long these, they call them bar, B-A-R, it's a bar, but it's really a coffee bar. And everybody is in there day and getting that little 50-cent cappuccino or espresso, and they're rituals, you know? And this year, I was trying to think of any ritual that wasn't of Yahweh, I wanted to release it. I wanted to release that facade that's in the world. And, you know, in the internet, there's so many facades, you know. The lunar Sabbath, the new thing that came up, right? The flat earth, the earth is flat, can you imagine? In 500 years, we're back to that again? You got to be kidding, but there's a lot of people who think it's true. The Sabbath is Sunday, right? You know, from 1700 years ago, most of Christianity is still believing the Sabbath is Sunday. And these are all things that people could have been released of in this year of release. All of Satan's false narratives. And if you don't think there's a false narrative in your life, then you're a Laodicean. Because Revelation 12:9 says Satan has deceived the whole world, and every one of us are part of that world. So one way or another, every one of us have a false narrative somewhere. And I really pray during the Shemitah that that was part of your prayer, to be released from the false narrative of whatever it was, whatever brainwashing the New World Order had in our minds that we were getting out of it. Shemitah was a year of release to that, and to build the true narrative of faith through Yahweh in His Word. That's what it was all about. To go out there every day, not knowing whether He was going to provide spinach on the ground, hundreds of walnuts from the trees, whatever it was. And it reminded us a lot of the first year we left America, because that's the way it was. Every day we would pray before we leave the house, and wow, it was unbelievable what would happen. Who you're meeting, what you're finding. To live by faith every day of your life, how great that was. And it was really a year of going back to that. And more than anything, it was a year of sanctification. Because you want to know something? We found out with wheat, it's very difficult to know. Because even if something is marked flour in the supermarket, that's only the date that they're putting the flour in. You have no idea when that wheat was picked. You have no idea when it was harvested. So in a Shemitah year, you go out, maybe at a bakery, that flour was from 2 years ago. Or maybe it was from yesterday. But you want to know something? In your house, you know for sure. In our house, we knew that everything was Shemitah ready because we prepared for it. And it really showed us that, wow, if we stay within the confines, almost what Andy was talking about, if we stay within the confines of the camp, you're sanctified, you're safe. But the minute you go out, you don't know. You know, you don't know. And yet, we are told we are in the world but not of the world. So we do have to leave the camp at times to witness for the work of Yahweh, for whatever. But it really showed me in this Shemitah that you better be praying every time you leave the camp. You have to pray constantly. The Bible says pray without ceasing. And no matter what you're doing, as you're walking down the street, praying to the Father, on your way to work, praying to the Father, what do you have for me today? Don't let me just be within my ritual, right? Because every one of us have a job, and part of that job is a ritual. But you have no idea if during that workday, Yahweh has somebody that's there to meet you, right? You have no idea if there's a purpose that you have. There's someone that needs your help. And if you're stuck within the ritual, you're never going to see that. You have to be thinking outside the box. You have to be thinking of the sanctification. And the one thing really I want to say is, to all of us who did that, we can't go back. What you gained in this last year, don't go back. You can't go back. You have to build on the seeds that we planted for the future. Matthew 12 and verse 43. It says, "Now when an unclean spirit goes out from a man, it wanders in places that have no water in them, and seeks rest but does not find it. Then it says, I will return to my house from where I came out, and it finds that it is empty and swept and orderly. Then it will go and lead seven other spirits with it who are worse than it, and they will enter and dwell in it, and the end of the man will be worse than the beginning. This evil generation will be like this," right? So many of us worked really, really hard this year. We worked for sanctification. We worked to get closer to Yahweh. And really, it's our calling. It should be every year of our life for that. But really, let's take this serious. Because if you don't move ahead, if now that the Shemitah is over, it's just like, okay, you know, see you in 7 years. This is what's going to happen, right? You sweep the house clean, you make these changes, and you don't keep that house swept clean, He's going to bring seven other spirits. 2 Peter 2 and verse 20. 2 Peter 2 and verse 20. Says, "For if when they have escaped the pollutions of the world by the knowledge of our Master and Redeemer, Yeshua the Messiah, they become again entangled in the very same things and are overcome by them, their later end is worse with them than the beginning. For it was better for them not to know the way of righteousness than, having recognized it, to turn from the holy commandment delivered to them. But the word of the true proverb has happened to them. The dog returns to his own vomit, also the sow that was washed to wallowing in the mud." And this is why when we're counseling people for baptism, we try to share with them, this is a serious thing. Because if you go back on that commitment, it's the lake of fire. It's death. You better know what you're doing. Because you're playing with your eternal life on the hands here. And here it is. The times we're living in, it's the great falling away. Many people are falling away. Many people are going back. They're going back to the same old things. And like it says, you know, that the dog to the vomit, you know, just like it is. We don't want that, you know. If you worked hard this year, if you really overcame things, if you really released things to Yahweh and He took them, man, you got to work hard not to let them come back. You got to hold on. You have to claim that victory. You have to really hold on to what you did and not go back, or the end will be worse than the beginning. So I was thinking about it, like I said, sitting there after the Shemitah was over and saying, now what? And then I thought, well, in Bible times, what would be the first thing you would do when the Shemitah ends? Right? Because remember, the Shemitah ends on Tishri 1, the first day of the seventh month. In just 2 weeks is Sukkot. So you're already 2 or 3 weeks behind in what? Harvesting. Harvesting. The very first thing you do when the Shemitah ends is harvest. Because it's already ready, right? You couldn't harvest before the Shemitah. You're not allowed to plant. You're not allowed to harvest during the Shemitah. So when the Shemitah ends on Tishri 1, right, a couple weeks ago, all of your fruit trees are all, they're all filled already. They're all ready. Everything is ready for harvest. It's not the time for planting. The time for planting is in a little while from now. They'll start planting in maybe about another month or so, maybe a little less, depending on when the rain comes. But as soon as the Shemitah ends, it's harvest time. It's harvest time. Mark 4 in verse 13. Mark 4 and verse 13. And he said to them, do you not know this parable, the parable of the sower and the seed? And how will you know all parables? So now he's going to explain the parable to us. The sower sows the word. Okay, so we see that the seed is the word of Yahweh. That's what we're planting. Because like I said, in the Shemitah year, we're not planting fruits and vegetables. We're not planting physical seeds, but we're planting spiritual seeds. That's the year for spiritual seeds. Yahweh says, look, I know in this world, we know it from Genesis 3, by the sweat of your brow, you're going to eat your bread and all these different things, you know. But he says, every seventh year, don't worry about it. I'm going to get you out of that system for 1 year. You don't have to worry about your food. You don't have to worry about this. But I'll take care of the physical life. You take care of the spiritual life. So the sower sows the word. The word is the seed. And these are those by the wayside where the seed is sown. And when they hear, Satan comes at once and takes away the word, having been sown in their hearts. We've seen it before. And likewise, these are the ones having been sown on the rocky places, who when they hear the word, they immediately receive it with joy. But they have no roots in themselves. Rather, are of a short time. And when affliction happens, or persecution becomes because of the word, they are quickly offended. We've seen that. And those who are sown in the thorny place, or those who hear the word, and the cares of the world, and the deception of riches, and the rest of other lusts enter in and choke the word, and it becomes without fruit. We've seen that one many, many times, probably the most. And these are those being sown on good ground, who hear and welcome the word and bring forth fruit, 130, 160, 100-fold. And he said to them, does the lamp come that it may be put under the grain measure or under the bed? Is it not also that it may be put on the lampstand? For there is not anything which is hidden that will not be revealed, and not anything existing in secret that won't be revealed. If anyone has ears to hear, let him hear. And he said to them, watch what you hear. With what measure you measure, it will be measured to you, and it will increase to you, those who hear. And whoever may have, more will be given to him. Talking about the Holy Spirit now. And the one who does not even what he has will be taken from him. Right? So that's what I'm saying here, that it's harvest time. It's harvest time. The first thing we do when the Shemitah ends is we harvest what's already there. Time to harvest the seeds that were planted on the good ground. There's no time, because remember, if you look at the parable of the sower, there's no fruit to the one that was by the wayside. There's no fruit to the one in the rocky places. There's no fruit to the one in the thorns. The fruit is to the one on good ground. So it's time for us to start harvesting the fruits of good ground. I told you, just since January in Africa, we can't keep up with it. There's thousands and thousands of people from countries all over the place. We also see it in India, already making plans to go back to India. We already had a trip there last year. We have elders on their way out to Papua New Guinea, Malaysia. We have other trips coming up. And these are all good ground. These are people that want the truth. These are people that are hungry for the truth. And I told you, I honestly believe Yahweh's Spirit is being poured out. Because in 33 years, I've never seen anything like this. I've never seen anything like it where it's not a person or two people or a family. It's nations that are coming. Liberia. I have an invitation from the president of Liberia. They built a new presidential mansion and he asked me to come there and pray over that mansion. Because they believe in it. They believe in the work. They believe in what's coming on. So, as the Shemitah is ended, we have to think about that. It's harvest time. It's time to harvest. Because we couldn't harvest up until the Shemitah ended. But now that the Shemitah is over, the first thing we have to do is harvest those good seeds that are waiting there. Then after that, of course, once you harvest after the Shemitah, what's the next thing you're going to do? You're going to start getting ready for the next season, the next season of sowing. So what's the first thing we do before you sow? Let's go to Jeremiah, Jeremiah 4. Because you just don't go out there and sow seed, or what's going to happen? It's not going to come on good ground. So the first thing you do before you sow, you have to prepare the land. You have to fallow the land. Jeremiah 4 and verse 1, it says, "If you return to me, O Israel, says Yahweh, return to me. And if you will turn away from your hateful idols out of my face and will not waver, and you will swear as Yahweh lives in truth and justice and in righteousness, even the nation shall bless themselves in him, and in him they will glory. For so says Yahweh to the men of Judah and to Jerusalem, break up your fallow ground, and do not sow to the thorns." Right? It's not the time to sow to the thorns. You know, if you're sowing to the thorns, you're not going to get anything from it. Yahweh's Spirit is being poured out. It's harvest time. So you want to break up your fallow ground on good ground. Circumcise yourself to Yahweh and take away the foreskin of your heart. It's time that we have to mature. It's time we have to stop being Laodiceans. It's time we have to humble ourselves before Yahweh. We have to realize who we are. We have to realize who He is. And it's time to work together. O men of Judah and those living in Jerusalem, that my fury not go forth like fire and burn, so that no one can put it out because of the evil of your doings. Declare in Judah and make it heard in Jerusalem and say, blow the ram's horn in the land, cry the end, right? We're getting close to it. It could be the last seven, maybe one more, or maybe it, but we certainly don't have five or six or seven more sevens to go. And say, assemble yourself and go into the cities of defense. Right, go into the cities of defense. Lift up a banner toward Mount Zion. Flee for safety and do not wait. Like Andy was saying, it's time to come out of the system. And if you're not doing it now, if you didn't keep the Shemitah, you're behind already. But if you wait another seven, you ain't going to make it. It's time to start, and you have to start somewhere, right? You know, you have to start somewhere. That's what I say. You know, like statement, you know, that the longest start to any journey comes with that first step. You know, because it doesn't come in one night. We don't grow in character overnight. Yahweh has us over a lifetime, we have to grow. So you have to start that journey. And coming out of the system may mean changing your job. It may mean starting out from the city to the country. You may be in the country and you're going to the next step. Whatever it is, but you have to continue on that walk. You can't stop here, okay? And what I learned in my life, as far as I'm concerned, the Shemitah will never end. The Shemitah is every year. Because the Shemitah was something to sanctify me, and I'm going to build on that. I'm going to build on that up until the next seven, and as long as I'm here. So we want to make sure, like it says, go into the cities of defense, lift up a banner toward Mount Zion, flee for safety, and do not wait, for I will bring evil from the north in a great wound. We are on the precipice of this world changing and never going back. And like I said, it's serious. Russia is preparing, America is preparing, and China is preparing. That's a fact. You could just open up your internet and you'll see 20 stories every day what's happening. And it's getting very, very close. And when this war comes, the Bible tells us a fourth of mankind will die. 2 billion people. You know how many people died in World War II? 50 million. You're talking about 500, 600 times more than that? It's going to be horrific. And out of that, what will come? People will think that was the Great Tribulation. The Antimessiah will come. And Satan will deceive the whole world. So it's really time. We have to start coming out of that world. Start in that baby step and then go to the next one. But you can't wait any longer. Because you know what? The Shemitah is already over. We already started that next seven. And if you haven't joined the race, you're really far behind. If you haven't joined the race, you're really far behind. So we have to get that ground ready first. Let's go to Hosea 10. Hosea, the 10th chapter. In verse 11. Hosea 10 in verse 11. It says, "And Ephraim is a trained heifer, loving to tread out. But I passed over on the good of her neck. I will make Ephraim to ride. Judah shall plow. Jacob shall break clods for him." Judah will plow. Jacob will break clods for him, right? So Jacob, Ephraim, we have to go first. We have to make the ground fallow. Even we all know, right, that there's going to be a great harvest for Judah, our brother, in the end time. But we have to go and we have to fallow the ground. We have to prepare the ground for it. He says, "Sow to yourselves in righteousness. Reap his kindness. Break up your fallow ground, for it is time to seek Yahweh until he comes and rains righteousness on you." And part of the reason why many have not been bearing fruit is they never broke up the ground first. You don't plant seeds until you break up that fallow ground. And the Shemitah was a time to break the fallow ground. This was the time to, like I said, get rid of all of those rituals that have nothing to do with Yahweh. Break off the relationships of people that have nothing to do with Yahweh. It's the time to get serious. It was the greatest year of sanctification that you could have ever had. And I pray you took advantage of it. "You have plowed wickedness. You have reaped iniquity. You have eaten the fruit of lies because you trusted in your way and the multitude of your mighty warriors." So again, this is the reason why many haven't been bearing fruit, because they're not breaking up that fallow ground. The Shemitah should have prepared our fallowing by being sanctified from the world, by leaving our old ways behind. Like I said, breaking bad relationships, taking control of our life. That's what it was about. We got to leave that system to take control of our life. Galatians 6 in verse 6. Galatians 6 and verse 6 says, "But let the one being taught in the word share with the one teaching in all good things. Do not be deceived. Elohim is not mocked. For whatever a man may sow, that he will also reap. For the one sowing to his flesh will reap corruption of the flesh, but the one sowing to the Spirit will reap everlasting life from the Spirit. And let us not be weary now that we are working for good, for in the season of reaping we will not faint. So then, as we have opportunity, let us work good toward all men, especially toward the sons of the household of faith." So again, if right now you haven't been bearing fruit, don't worry. The Shemitah was the time to prepare the ground. The Shemitah was the time to get our mind set. The Shemitah was the time to sanctify us. But now it's harvest time. Right now it's harvest time. So I pray during the Shemitah, you've been spiritually preparing yourself for the great harvest that's coming here. And we're in the time of that harvest, like it says. But what you sow is what you're going to reap. What is your life? Are you sowing to the flesh or are you sowing to the Spirit? 2 Corinthians 9 and verse 6. 2 Corinthians 9 and verse 6. "But remember this, the one sowing sparingly will also reap sparingly, and the one sowing generously will also reap generously. Each one as he purposes in his heart, not grudgingly or out of necessity, for Yahweh loves a cheerful giver. And Elohim is about to make all grace to abound toward you, that in everything, always having all sufficiency, you may abound to every good work. Even as it has been written, he who has distributed liberally, he has given to the poor. His righteousness abides forever. Now he that supplies seed to the sower and bread for eating, may he supply and multiply your seed and increase the fruits of your righteousness. In everything you being enriched to all sincerity, which works out thanksgiving to Yahweh through us. Because the ministry of this service is not only making up the things lacking of the saints, but also multiplying through many thanksgiving to Yahweh. Through the proof of this charitable service, they glorifying Yahweh by your freely expressed submission to the good news of Messiah, and through your generosity, you have become partakers with them and with all men. And they offer prayer on your behalf and greater love because of the overflowing grace of Elohim, which is on you. But thanks be to Elohim for his unspeakable free gift. Wow. So like he says, those sowing sparingly will reap sparingly. You know, this year, all of us were blessed by each other's prayers and blessings and the mammon that we shared with each other. We had an amazing year in the ministry, in this ministry. We were blessed to build 6 congregational halls, including a kibbutz, just in this year, just in the Shemitah year. And like I say, it was because everybody did it, like he says here. It was everybody sowing those spiritual seeds, helping each other, praying for each other. And Yahweh put the blessing there. You know, like he says, one man plants, one man waters, but Yahweh gives the increase. So what a blessing that all of us, and it does make you a cod, it does bring you closer when you have a common goal. And that all of us surrendered ourselves to Yahweh and to each other, and the outcome was what? Was all these things. Now what? Now that it's time for harvest? In Kenya alone, I'll give you one example. Back when I went to that conference in January, we had 2 official elders there, and we had 2 official congregations there, small congregations. Today, we have 25 congregations, 27 elders, and close to 1,000 members, and 5 buildings that were not there before. It's harvest time. What does that mean? It means, like Elder Mutai said, there's many people coming. If we didn't have the buildings, we couldn't take them, right? So we were breaking that fallow ground. We were preparing these things, same as in the Philippines. And now we are ready for the harvest. We're ready for the harvest. We're spiritually ready. We're mentally ready. We're ready to go out. And we're ready for Yahweh to bring all these people to us. Because, you know, I always say this in the Bible school. Sometimes what looks like your greatest blessing can turn to your greatest adversity, right? We go on a mission trip, and if there's one person that comes to faith, like the Jewish saying, if you save one soul, you've saved the universe. So if even one person came to faith, you're thankful for that. But what happens when an elder goes on a mission trip and 1,000 people come to faith? And he doesn't have the resources. He doesn't have Bibles. He doesn't have books. He can't counsel them. He's by himself. And what happens after that? What happens when he goes back? There's no elder there. There's no structure. There's no congregation. And then he comes back 6 months later and everybody's scattered. And that's why you have to break the fallow ground. You have to prepare. If you want to harvest, you got to break your fallow ground. It's got to be good ground too, not stony ground, not rocky ground. And then you have to sow good seeds, and then you got to nurture it. And this is what this Shemitah was all about. And you can't serve 2 masters. You'll either love the one and hate the other, or, you know, be attentive to one and despise the other. You can't serve Yahweh and the world. It's one or the other. And this is why the Shemitah forced us. Yahweh forced us. If he didn't force us, we wouldn't have done it. But praise you, Yahweh, that you forced us to sanctify our lives and fallow the ground, get it ready, because it's harvest time. It's harvest time, and Yahweh is doing a great work. Go to John 12 and verse 24. Very interesting scripture. John 12 and verse 24 says, "Truly, truly, I say to you that a grain of wheat, except it should fall and die on the ground, remains by itself. But if it dies, it produces much fruit. Whoever loves his soul will destroy it, and whoever hates his soul in this world will keep it to life eternal. If anyone serves me, let him follow me, and where I am, there my servant will be also. And if anyone serves me, the Father will honor him. Right? So this is what he's saying. A grain of wheat, except it should fall and die on the ground, it remains by itself, but if it dies, it produces much fruit. And that's our calling, right? You come into the new covenant, and we're supposed to die to the flesh. Every day we should be surrendering something else to Yahweh. We surrender our mammon, we surrender our pride, we surrender our selfishness, until there's nothing left to be living sacrifices to Him every day. But it's very interesting, because if you didn't really prepare totally, what happens? Now, right, after harvest time, you have a bag of seed there, and you have to make a very big decision. Do you use that seed to plant for a new harvest that may never come, right? You're going to plant that harvest, and if you don't get rain, if you don't get Yahweh's blessing, you got to wait 5-6 months, and that harvest may never come, and then you have no food. So that's a big decision. Do we keep that little bit of grain we have now and use it for food through this long winter, or do we plant it for new seeds? And that's why I say, you know, he who sows sparingly reaps sparingly. Because if you're sowing bountifully, right, and you're reaping bountifully, that's not a problem. Because you have so much of that grain, you got plenty to re-sow, and you got plenty to eat. So for those who haven't, for those who haven't taken it serious, for those who were half-hearted, for those that are just maybe waking up and saying, you know what, I should have given more to this, you got a big decision you make. What do you do with that little bit of seed you have less? Do you plant new seeds, or do you use it for now? Because the time is running out. Big question asked. John 9:4 says, it is necessary for me to work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night comes when no one is able to work. Right? It is necessary for me to work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night comes when no one is working. It's harvest time. You know, we could already see the sun starting to set. Not a lot of time left. This could be the most important 7-year Shemitah period. 7-year cycle, I should say, that we've ever had. And nobody knows. Nobody knows. You got an election coming a few weeks in America that could literally change the dynamics of the whole world. And you don't really have too good of a choice there, you know. I mean, I don't know if on either candidate you can really look and say there's safety. You know, you have a very, very prideful loose cannon that in Donald Trump, you know, that is not a politician, that it's nobody knows. He may be another Ronald Reagan, or he may take the country down the tubes. And Hillary Clinton, I think we know what we're getting. You're getting somebody who openly is a satanic worshiper. They even talked about it in the debates. And somebody who for 30 years has done nothing but served herself, did a lot of different bad things, as we know. There's a video called The Clinton Files, and you can see there's something like 100 and something people who were close to the Clintons who wound up dead. So probably not a good thing to be a close friend of one of Bill or Hillary Clinton. They're very evil people. They're very, very high up in the Masonic order. So you don't have a very good choice there either way. And believe me, either way, you know, as Babylon goes, so goes the world. 70 years are given to Babylon. We're almost done with that. And like I said, it's harvest time. It's harvest time. It's time to move forward. It's time with the harvest. And if we don't, there's trouble. Luke 19 in verse 12. It's time to put the kingdom first. Luke 19 in verse 12. Luke 19 in verse 12. Luke 19 in verse 12. Then he said, a certain well-born man went to a distant country to receive a kingdom for himself and to return. He's talking about his ascension to heaven and coming back later. And calling 10 of his slaves, you know, very interesting, 10 tribes, 10 slaves, he gave to them 10 minas and said to them, trade and keep busy until I come. But the citizens of a city hated him, you know, talking about his fellow Jews, and sent ambassadors after him, and they were saying, we do not want this man to rule over us. And it happened as he returned, having received the kingdom. We're right there now. Now we've had almost 2,000 years. And like I said, we are going into the 7-year cycle that can bring about his return here. Not necessarily in the 7, but maybe at the end or at the very next one, who knows. He even said to those servants to be called to him, those to whom he gave the silver, that he might know what each had gained by trading. And the first came saying, Master, your mina has gained 10 minas. And he said to him, well done, good slave. Because you were faithful in a least thing, have authority over 10 cities. And the second came saying, Master, your mina has gained 5 minas. And he said to this one also, you be over 5 cities. And another came saying, Master, behold your mina which I have stored up in a faced cloth. For I feared you, because you are a harsh man, taking what you did not lay down and reaping what you did not sow. But he said to him, I will judge you out of your own mouth, wicked slave. You knew that I am a harsh man, taking what I did not lay down and reaping what I did not sow. And why did you not give my silver on the bank table? In coming, I might have exacted it with interest. And to those standing by, he said, take the mina from him and give it to him who has 10 minas. It's representative of the Holy Spirit. For I say to you, to everyone who has, it will be given. And from the one who does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. So very, very interesting, right? We said, if you sow sparingly, you reap sparingly. And this is talking about the Holy Spirit, you know? That if you're sowing sparingly seeds of the Spirit, you're going to reap sparingly seeds of the Spirit. But we must put the kingdom first in our life. Now, we said, it's the ministry of reconciliation, not condemnation. Is it too late? What happened if we at this point, you know, we really haven't been taking our calling the most serious? What happened if all of a sudden, maybe even this feast, who knows? You just realize, you know something, I know I could do better, I know I can do more, but is it too late? That's the question that comes up, right? Is it too late? Let's go to Matthew 20. Because Yahweh is part of the ministry of restoration. Matthew 20. In verse 1. For the kingdom of heaven is like a man, a housemaster, who went out when it was early to hire workers into his vineyard. And he bargained with the laborers for a denarius per day. And he sent them into his vineyard. And going out about the third hour, he saw others standing idle in the market. And he said to them, you also go into the vineyard, and I will give you whatever is just. And they went. Again, about the sixth hour, in the ninth hour, he did the same. And going out about the 11th hour, right? There's only 12 hours in a day. He found others standing idle, and he said to them, why do you stand idle all day? And they said to him, because no one has hired us. And he said to them, you also go into the vineyard, and you will receive whatever is just. But evening having come, the master of the vineyard said to his manager, call the workers and pay them the wage, beginning from the last to the first. Remember, the first will be last and the last will be first. And the ones having come to the 11th hour, these are the ones that only worked 1 hour, received a denarius. And having come the first ones, the ones that worked all 12 hours, they supposed that they would receive more. And they each also received a denarius. And having received it, they murmured against the housemaster, saying, these last have performed only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden in the heat of the day. But answering, he said to one of them, friend, I did you no wrong. Did you not agree to a denarius with me? Take yours and go, but I desire to give this, to give to this last as also to you. Or is it not lawful for me to do what I desire with my things? Or is your eye evil because my eye is good? So the last will be first, and the first will be last. And many are called, but few are chosen. So with Yahweh, it's never too late. It's never too late. And you know, when you have the Spirit of Yahweh, like I said, I'm 33 years in this walk, and I am more than happy to share the reward with everybody that would come. I don't care if they come in the last minute, never mind the last hour. Because that's what Yahweh's will is. Yahweh's will is that no one will perish, but all come to salvation. And that's why I say it's harvest time. That when we're going out to harvest now, we're not going to be bitter with the people coming in the last hour. We're happy. We're happy that these people are coming to salvation. We're with open arms. We're welcoming them into the kingdom of Yahweh. Jacob 2 and verse 14. Because like I said, the time for words is over. It's the time for actions. The time for words is over. It's the time for action because it's harvest time. And if we only talk, you know, there's a proverb, I don't have it in my notes, where it talks about, you know, the lazy man during harvest time gets nothing, right? You know, and it really is true. At harvest time, it's the time to work. And now we are heading into the most serious 7-year period since creation, and it's the time to work. It is the time to work. Jacob 2, starting in verse 14. My brothers, what is the gain if anyone says he has faith but does not have deeds? Is the faith able to restore life to him? But if a brother or a sister is naked and may be lacking in daily food, and if any one of you say to them, go in peace, be warm and filled, but does not give them the things the body needs, what gain is it? So also faith, if it does not have deeds, is dead by itself. And like I said, the little widow that's out there, and they write me sometimes, and they say, you know, I'm a widow, I have no strength, I don't have money, what can I do? How can I help and be part of this? And the prayers of the righteous, you know, are holy to Yahweh. And that widow that may only have $1 to give and praying 6 or 8 hours a day, because of her, we have 6 buildings that are built in Africa. And because of every single person that came together, just like the miracle of the fish and the loaves, and gave the little bit, you know. We have 5,000 Bibles that are printed. They'll be coming out in the next week or two to Africa, to India, and to the Philippines. That's by mostly the brethren in South Africa. But also others that help, that give, right? That's the blessing that we have, you know? And the interesting part is usually, and we're going to see this in a little while before we end here, usually the person who sows wants to reap what he sowed, right? Because he sowed it. Here we have where we're going to see that Yahweh says in the end, one man sows and another man reaps. And we're happy to that because we're all working together. We're on the same team. And it doesn't matter who is giving the door, who's giving the window, and who's giving the bricks. At the end of the day, we're building a building, right? And now we're building physical buildings in the congregations, but really what we're building is a spiritual building to Yahweh. And every one of us are pillars in the house of Yahweh, like it says in Peter. And everyone is as important as the next one. Judicial order is simply an authority. It's not an importance. Like I said, if a policeman walks in that door, we will all respect him because he's an authority. But it doesn't mean that policeman is better than anybody. An elder is not better than anybody. He may have more authority in the congregation. But in Yahweh's eyes, life is life. We're all equal. And what Yahweh looks at to us is, are we looking for the widow? Are we looking for the poor? Are we looking for the destitute? Are we looking for our brothers that they can't build a building for themselves, that we have to help them? And that's what it comes down to. It's harvest time. It's harvest time. And you know, if you ever worked in harvesting or in crops, you know that when you're going out to your fields and you're just starting to harvest, you're going to harvest the fruit first that is the most overripe. Right? Because that's the one that's ready to fall. That's the one, if you don't harvest it, you're going to lose it. And then you'll go for the other fruit that will come later. So that's what we want to do. We want to look in the congregation for the people that need our help the most. That's what we want to do. Like I said, in Burundi, the brethren there, that some of them even going to prison simply for witnessing in the time we're living in. And why was it? Because they weren't registered. Why weren't they registered? Because they didn't have the proper documentation and they needed a building. The country would not recognize them as a legal congregation without a church building. We got them a building now. We got them registered. Now the congregation is doubled or tripled, and I think we have 7 congregations there. This is powerful, and each of us can be part of that in each area. It's harvest time. It's harvest time. It's time now. If you don't do it now, when will you ever do it? Will you be one of those when Yeshua returns that you say, Master, Master, and he's going to say, I never knew you? Because he's only going to say that if you didn't work, if you didn't bear fruit. And you didn't bear fruit only if you don't have faith, like we said yesterday. If you truly believe that Yahweh is real and his word is real, and we're living in these days, then it's harvest time. It's time to roll up our sleeves, and it's time when this 7 is starting now to go and do the work of Yahweh. But someone will say, you have faith and I have deeds. Verse 18, show me your faith apart from your deeds, and I will show you my faith by my deeds. Wow. You believe Elohim is one, you do well, even the demons believe and shudder. But are you willing to know, O vain man, that faith apart from deeds is dead? Was not our father Abraham justified by his deeds, offering up his son Isaac on the altar? We talked about that yesterday. You see how faith helped with his deeds, and how his deeds, and by his deeds, the faith was made perfect. And the scripture was fulfilled, saying Abraham believed Yahweh, and it was counted to him for righteousness. And he was called friend of Elohim. Got to believe him. Impossible to believe Yahweh without faith. You must believe he is, and he's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. You see then how a man by his deeds becomes righteous is not by faith alone. But the same way Rahab the innkeeper was also justified by her deeds, having received the messengers and sending them out by another way. For as the body is dead apart from the spirit, so also faith without deeds is dead. And I'm not going to go to John 15. We went there the other day, but what does it say? I am the vine, you are the branches. Unless you stay in me, you will wither away. And he says, if you bear much fruit, then you will stay in the body and be part of it. But if you don't bear fruit, what happens? He's going to prune you. And literally the scripture is talking about going to the lake of fire. Going to the lake of fire. Luke 17. Luke 17. Because one of the questions I also ask at the Bible school, right? You look at 1 Corinthians 6 and 19 and 20. What does it say? Your life has been bought and paid for. Your life is bought and paid for. The Torah says eye for eye, tooth for tooth, life for life. Every single person who has ever lived has committed crimes that bring death. Right? Yeshua said, you shall not murder. Right? The law says you shall not murder. But I say if you've ever gotten angry, you've murdered already. Every one of us has a death penalty over our head. Right? And the fact that Yeshua came to this earth not to just forgive our sins, but to pay the penalty for those sins. Because it wouldn't be justice before Yahweh if he just said, okay, I forgive everybody. That's not justice. Justice is there has to be a penalty paid for the crime. He came to pay that penalty. But by doing that now, you don't just say, thanks a lot, let me go back to my life. Your life is bought and paid for. And that's what I ask the students at the school. Are you a master or are you a slave? Very simple question. Are you a master or are you a slave? Because again, we just saw in the book of Jacob, you know it by the deed. What are you doing? Because a master is the one that goes out and builds his own kingdom and lives by himself and carries all these things and does all these things and lives good. The slave is the person who surrenders himself to Yahweh, to the congregation, to each other. That's the slave. So look at what he says here. In Luke 17:7, he says, but which of you having a servant plowing or tending a flock will immediately say to him coming out of the field, come recline, right? Now, if the master of the house and you're the slave and you're plowing the field and you're working all day like a dog, when you come in, does the master say, ah, you're working hard. Sit down here, eat before me. No, look what he says. He says, but he will say to him, prepare something that I may eat. And having girded himself, serve me until I eat and drink. And after these things, you shall eat and drink. But what thanks does he receive, the servant, because he did the things that were commanded? I don't think so. Likewise, even you. When you have done all the things that are commanded you, you say that we are idle servants because we have done only what we ought to. Right? The Torah is a commandment. So we don't have to tell Yahweh how much he owes us because we're keeping the Sabbath. I've heard people in Church of God years ago always saying that. As if Yahweh owed them something. You know, if I was working, I'd be making all this money and how much I sacrificed for Yahweh. No, he sacrificed for us. It's our honor that we can be his servant. So are you a servant or are you a master? You know, it's one or the other. Because when the kingdom comes, what's going to happen? Is Yeshua going to come and pat you on the back and bow to you and put a crown on your head and say, go up there now on the stage and take your throne and all of us will worship you? Like the scripture says, I don't think so. I don't think so. The slave comes in after working all day and he says, make my food, let me eat and drink, and then you'll eat later. And you know when we'll eat and drink? At the wedding supper. That's the time. That's what I say. Now's not the time for patting on the back. Now's not the time for anything else. Now is the time for rolling up our sleeves and working. And if we work and if we're faithful, there's only one person you want to praise you, and that's Yeshua when he returns. You want him to pat you on the back when he returns and say, well done, good servant. Enter the kingdom of my Father. And if you're there, then your reward will be this wonderful wedding supper where we will eat and drink with him. But it's not the time to eat and drink right now. It's the time to work, right? The Shemitah's ended. Our fruits are all out there in the trees. If we don't get out there and harvest, they're going to fall to the ground and they're going to rot and die. It's the time to work. It's the time for harvest. Romans 6. Verse 2 through 7. Let it not be, we who have died to sin, how shall we live in it anymore? You know, there's brethren sometimes I deal with when I'm counseling that are dealing with sin sometimes for years and years and years and years. And they keep saying, I can't overcome this sin. I repent and I go back to it. I don't understand why. And I tell them, it's very simply, you love the sin too much. You love the sin too much. If you're doing the sin over and over, then somewhere in your conscious or unconscious mind, you're loving that sin too much. But we who have died to sin, how shall we live in it any longer? Or are you ignorant that all who were baptized into Messiah Yeshua were baptized into his death? Therefore we are buried with him through baptism into death, that as Messiah was raised up from the dead by the glory of the Father, so also we should walk in newness of life. Remember, unless a seed falls to the ground and dies, it stays alone. But if it goes in the ground and dies, it bears much fruit. And we are buried with him in baptism. We're like that new seed when we're baptized. And now we come up to bear much fruit. To bear much fruit. For if you have been planted together with him in the likeness of his death, so also shall we be in the resurrection. For we know this, that our old self was crucified with him, and the body of sin might be destroyed, so that we no longer serve sin. For he who is dead has been freed from sin. The Shemitah, the year of release, like I said, whatever you release to Yahweh, don't let it come back in your life. Rebuke it. Satan is a roaring lion looking around who he can devour. And he tries to get you when you least expect it. And that's why you have to keep yourself sanctified. He who is dead to sin has been... For he who is dead has been freed from sin. Drop down to verse 16. Do you not know that to whom you present yourself as slaves for obedience, you are slaves to whom you obey, whether of sin to death or obedience to righteousness? And we said this before. Yeshua has already qualified. He's already won the election, so to speak, right? He has taken over this world. He just hasn't taken the position yet. Because from the time of the election, like the election in America, it's coming in 2 weeks, there'll be 2 months for the new administration to get together, to get his cabinet, to get everything together. And that's what we're in now. We're in the time of that administration being prepared. And he's testing us. Because maybe he has you to be his foreign ministry. But he got to make sure you're going to be faithful. So he's testing us with that. And to whom you present yourself as slaves to obedience, and to slaves to whom you obey, whether of sin to death or obedience to righteousness. So are you still living for Satan's system who lost the election? Are you living for the lame duck? You know, Satan, who's in there now, that's getting ready to go? Or are you living for the kingdom of Yahweh? Are you living for the one that's coming right around the corner? But thanks be to Elohim that you were slaves of sin, but you obeyed from the heart the form of doctrine to which you were delivered. Is doctrine important? Absolutely. Because there's one faith, there's one family, there's one doctrine, one baptism. And having been set free from sin, you were enslaved to righteousness. I speak as a man on account of the weakness of your flesh. For as you yielded your members as slaves to uncleanness and to iniquity, so now yield your members as slaves to righteousness unto sanctification. That's what the whole Shemitah is about, sanctifying ourselves from the world. For when you were slaves of sin, you were free as to righteousness. Therefore, what fruit did you have then in the things which you are now ashamed? Right? What fruit were we bearing in the world in the things we're now ashamed of? For the end of those things is death. But now, having been set free from sin and having been enslaved to Elohim, You have your fruit unto sanctification and the end, everlasting life. For the wages of sin is death, but the gift of Yahweh is everlasting life in Yeshua Messiah, our Master. Wow. That's what it's about. We've been released from the old self. The Shemitah was almost like a new baptism. You know, it was like a start all over, that wherever you were before this, you know, just like debt. Maybe you got in a lot of debt and you couldn't pay, something happened, but then the Shemitah comes. And you can start all over again. That's what the Shemitah is about. Now we're just starting this new seven. This is about the newness of life. Whatever you did yesterday, don't worry about it. Start today. Take it seriously. Look at your spiritual gifts. Make a plan of action. Serve Yahweh with your heart, your mind, your soul, and your strength. Because time is running out. 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 16. 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 16. So as we now know no one according to flesh, but even if we have known Messiah according to flesh, yet now we no longer know him so. So that if anyone is in Messiah, he is a new creation, right? A new seed, a new planting. The old things have passed away. Behold, all things have become new. Brand new 7-year cycle starting. And all things are from Elohim, the one having reconciled us to himself through Yeshua Messiah and having given us the ministry of reconciliation. This is not a ministry of condemnation. This is a message. The restoration message is a powerful message because everyone in the world is suffering and we can go out and we have the answer. The answer isn't money. The answer isn't physical things, although sometimes they're needed. The answer is the good news message. The answer is freedom from that old life. The answer is the torture of the mind that comes when you're following your own mind and not the mind of Messiah. So we have something to give them that the world needs. For Yahweh was a Messiah who has reconciled the world with his majesty, not charging their sins against them, and has committed to us the word of reconciliation. Then on behalf of Messiah, we are ambassadors. As Elohim is exhorting through us, we beseech on behalf of Messiah be reconciled to Yahweh, right? That's our program, the ambassadors for Israel. We're his representation. We have 19 countries in this room that are here. With Richard, it's 20. 20 countries. 20 countries that are here, that are ambassadors, that we come here at feast time to hear these things, to gather together, to strengthen each other. And tomorrow's the last great day. Then we'll go back to our countries and we have to represent him. We're ambassadors. For he who did not know sin for your sakes made himself sin that we might through him become the righteousness of Yahweh. Wow. This is what it's about. We're a new creation. We're a new seed planted. Jeremiah 31. Because like we said, Yahweh has a great plan still in store for Israel and particularly for the tribes of Ephraim, the northern tribes. Jeremiah 31. At that time, says Yahweh, I will be the Elohim of all the families of Israel, and they will be my people. So says Yahweh, Israel, the people, the survivors of the sword, have found grace in the wilderness, and I will go to give him rest. Yahweh has appeared to me from far away, saying, yes, I have loved you with an everlasting love. On account of this, with loving kindness, I have drawn you. Drop down to verse 9. They shall come with weeping, and I will lead them with prayers. I will cause them to walk by rivers of water in a right way. They shall not stumble in it, for I am a father to Israel, and Ephraim is my firstborn. Hear the word of Yahweh, O nations, and declare in the coastlands far away, and say, he who scattered Israel will gather him and keep him as a shepherd his flock. Go down to verse 24. And Judah and all the cities will live in it together. The tenant farmers and those who travel with flocks, right? For I will satisfy the weary soul, and I have filled every sorrowful soul. On this I awoke and looked up, and my sleep was sweet to me. Behold, the days come, says Yahweh. Even I will sow the house of Israel and the house of Judah with the seed of man and the seed of animal, right? This is what Yahweh is doing now. We're going out and harvesting from the last Shemitah. He's going to sow Ephraim and Judah in the new seven. And it shall be as I watched over them to pluck up and to break down and to throw down and to destroy and to bring calamity. So I will watch over them to build and to plant, says Yahweh. In those days, they shall not anymore say the fathers have eaten sour grapes and the teeth of the sons are dull. But every man will die in his iniquity. Every man who eats the sour grapes, his teeth will be dull. Behold, the days come, says Yahweh, that I will cut a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. Not according to the covenant I cut with their fathers in the day I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, which covenant they broke, though I was a husband to them, says Yahweh. But this is the covenant that I will cut with the house of Israel. After those days, says Yahweh, I will put my Torah in their inward parts. I will write it on their hearts, and I will be their Elohim, and they shall be my people. So this is what Yahweh, this is ultimately what our seeds are going to do, that Yahweh will plant the nation of Israel back in the land. Mark 4 and verse 26. Mark 4 and verse 26. And he said, so is the kingdom of Yahweh, as if a man should cast seed on the earth, and should sleep and rise night and day, and the seed should sprout and lengthen of itself, and he does not know. For of itself the earth bears fruit, first greenery, then an ear, then a full grain in the ear. And when the fruit is ripe, immediately he sends forth the sickle, for the harvest had come. And you know, in Revelation, the 15th chapter, he talks about sending his cherubs, because the earth is ripe, to come to the earth with the sword. And the blood is like the blood of grapes coming out. That there's a great harvest that's coming, that Yahweh is coming, a destroying harvest that's coming to the world. But we're seeing that the harvest is ready, like he says. It's not the greenery stage anymore. It's not the ear. We're at the harvest stage. The harvest is ready. The Shemitah is over. And we're entering the most important seven-year cycle we've ever went into. Psalm 126. Psalm 126 in verse 3 says, Yahweh did great things to work with us. We are glad. Turn again our captivity, O Yahweh, like the south streams. Those who sow in tears shall reap with joyful shouting. Surely he who walks and weeps, bearing a trail of seed, shall come again with joyful shouting, bearing in the sheaves. Surely he who walks and weeps, bearing a bag of seed, should be, shall come again with joyful shouting, bringing in sheaves. Like the song, bringing in the sheaves, bringing in the sheaves, right? We will come rejoicing, bringing in the sheaves. He who sows in tears will reap with joy. We talked about this. Why? Because when you're sowing your land, you've got to wait 4, 5, 6 months. You have no idea if you'll ever get anything. But here we are. We're in a time now where we don't have to sow in tears. Why don't we have to sow in tears? Because every seed that you sow spiritually, Yahweh is nurturing and taking care of. So we can sow in joy, right? And then we'll reap together. But no longer do we have to sow in tears. We are sowing in joy because we know the harvest has come. 1 Corinthians 3 and verse 9. 1 Corinthians 3 and verse 9. First Corinthians 3 and verse 6 through 9. It says, I planted, Apollos watered, but Yahweh made to increase. So then neither he who plants or he who waters deserves the credit, but Yahweh who gives the increase. Thus the planter and the waterer are equal, and each one will receive his own reward according to his own labor. For we work together with Yahweh. You are the Yahweh's work, and you are a building of Yahweh. Like we said, all of us are pillars in that temple. And like he said here, we can sow in joy because whether you're the one planting or you're the one watering, right? Or you're the one fertilizing, we're all part of the same project. We're all part of the same project because the end result, that plant is the kingdom of Yahweh and all of us are working toward there. And while what great joy we can take together when we work through the synergy together of what Yahweh's doing. And I'm excited. I'm really excited because what Brother Mutai said, that within 3 years we can have 1 million people in Africa that have come to faith. I believe it. I've seen it. I've been there at least 10 times. I know what comes, but we needed a foundation. We needed buildings. We needed elders. We needed, and we're not ready yet, but we're getting there. We're getting there. We have a structure that we've never had before, and we're getting ready for the harvest. John 4 and verse 31. John 4 and verse 31. But in the meantime, the disciples asked him, saying, Rabbi, eat, talking to Yeshua. And he said to them, I have food to eat which you do not know. Then the disciples said to one another, no one brought food for him to eat. And Yeshua said to them, my food is that I should do the will of him who sent me, and that I may finish his work. Do not say that after 4 months comes the harvest. Behold, I say to you, lift up your eyes and see the fields that are white and have ripened for the harvest already. This had to be a Shemitah, because this is right after Shavuot, and the fields are there. They're not cut yet. Only in a Shemitah would the fields still be there with 4 months left to the harvest. And he says, and he that reaps receives a wage and gathers fruit unto life that is eternal. And the sower and the reaper together will rejoice. For in this the word is true, that another is the one sowing and another is the one reaping. I sent you to reap what you have not labored over. Others have labored and you have entered into their labor. So how great is it, right? That we can sow in joy, because it really doesn't matter. If you're in the will of Yahweh and you're putting out those seeds, it makes no difference if you see the fruit, because somebody else will come after you and the fruit will come. Right? It's not about us. It's about Yahweh and it's about His work, and we're all working together. So my job is planting the seeds He's giving to me, and somebody else is going to come and reap it and praise Yahweh for that. And like He says, we will all rejoice together, because not one seed you plant will you lose your reward. That's what Yeshua says. What you do, even if somebody else is reaping, we're happily for that. You know, we're reaping what the apostles did 2,000 years ago. And they're happy that we're still here today. And because of their faithfulness, we're in this room. If we didn't have the Waldenses and the Anabaptists, right? And the Paulicians and the Bogomils. If we didn't have a faithful remnant from 30 AD when Yeshua started the congregation up until today, you know, unless He sent a remnant, we'd be like Sodom and Gomorrah. But Yahweh has been faithful and He sent a remnant in every generation. And now we are reaping what they sowed. And now we're sowing what someone else will reap. And we will all rejoice together, because at the end of the day, Yahweh gives the increase. And every single thing you do is being recorded in heaven. That's why I say, are you a master or a slave? Are you working for an earthly kingdom? Or do you believe this with all your heart, your mind, your soul, and your strength? And you are going to work to the best of your ability until the day that kingdom comes. Most seeds are already planted. The harvest is ready. We must work quick or we're going to lose the fruit out there. Luke 10, the last scripture. Luke 10, the last scripture. Verse 1 and 2. Luke 10 and verse 1 and 2. It says, and after these things, Yeshua also appointed 70 others from His disciples and sent them two by two before His face into every city and region where they were about to go. Right? It started with 12 apostles, but now it was expanding and growing. He had to put 70 more. He provided them. He says, therefore, He said to them, indeed, the harvest is much, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray to the master of the harvest that he may send out workers into the harvest. I remember even from Thailand, when Kay and a couple of the ladies first came here, the first ones that came from Thailand to the Holy Land. And I said to them, I said, Rob, you're the first ambassadors. And then the next year, a few more, and next year, a few more. Now, wow, you have a whole delegation here, just from Thailand, one country. And that's the way it is all over the world, right? The harvest is ready. The Shemitah is over. Of course the harvest is ready. But the workers are few. It's time to roll up our hands, roll up our sleeves, and it's time to go out to work. To diligently and quickly go out so we don't lose anything. Somebody else may reap what we sowed, but we will all share in the reward at the wedding supper. We are a family. Yahweh is expanding His family through the end time restoration ministry. We need to build on the following that we've been doing during the Shemitah. We don't want to go back to the things that we released. And we want to prepare and we want to reap the harvest and bear the fruit together for our eternal inheritance. Yahweh bless. Shabbat Shalom.